My name is Paul Vandenbroek and I'm from Belgium. I'm an art historian who is since a long time working at the Royal Museum of Fine Arts in Antwerp and who teaches two courses at the University of Leuven in the Faculty of Social Sciences. And for a long time my interest was focused on late medieval and early Renaissance arts. And in 1991, by chance, I came to Tunisia, and on the market in El Hamma, in the south, I saw an old textile laying on the ground, full of dust, dark brown, with small white signs or motifs in it. And although I had never studied anything about textile, I got struck and I got fascinated, and this fascination has not left me since. Now, in those textiles in Tunisia or North Africa, nothing was, almost nothing is recognizable. Scholars who were for the bigger part in the 20th century male ascribed the abstract nature of these textiles to the illiteracy of women, the women who had woven those textiles, and their inability to draw or to represent reality. And I also discovered soon that not one of the methodologies we had learned in art history was able to decipher, so to say, those abstract signs. There was no symbolism, there was no reference to outer material world or space. So how could it be that purely abstract signs or motifs, which in our view are mere decoration, would be laden with a deep meaning that was apparently operating on many levels: affect, emotion, convictions, fears, desires, ideas, and even what we would call philosophy. And it's also common belief in Western society that the personal inner life is something of modernity, of more recent times, and that it's not present in very archaic and even tribal societies. And in fact, women in those segregated society were not expected to express their inner life. So indeed I had to develop new ways for understanding, and it was the more difficult because the women weavers, and it were exclusively women who wove these textiles, had not a tradition of discourse upon their own work. They transmitted it from mother to daughter or from grandmother to granddaughter. And it was very funny in a way, because at first, I remember that was in 1991 in Gabès in southern Tunisia. To them it was very funny that a man and someone from elsewhere, from Europe, was asking about these things. They wanted to answer, but there were no clear premeditated answers, so it was a long, long process of bits of bits of bits of pieces, which eventually could be gathered and gave insight in this abstract art. To begin with, every motif has a name, but the name is not that what is intended to be represented. It's just like a hook on which you attach your jacket, a point of where you have some grip on a cloud of significations which operated on different levels. I will give you an example. There is, for instance, a motif that is very important in Tunisian weaving, and it is called Khalela. essentially, it's two opposed chevrons, two opposed triangles, of which the points do not touch. When asked about its meaning, they said, well, it's like a corner in which one can find something, but one may come upon it from either direction. It's not important. So this is to say, there are many ways to find what you need. And then halela means, in a literal sense, little needle. Halal is the needle. It's also the jewel, the fibula used to attach the bachnuk on the head of the breast. The words halela or halal are derived from the verb challa, which means to attach something, like a needle does, but also to go inside. On a mental level, it means to be specific. It also means to do something very special. I know it's quite multifaceted and very complex, but that's the way they operate. Hilal means the needle that unifies, that enters something, to attach it. But it was said by the weavers, it does not occupy any space of itself. It is almost absent. So there is a cloud of associations around that word, but in fact around the motive of those two opposed chevrons. And this all happens to be realized in a non-space. So you see how one abstract motive bears almost half a book.
Villa Romana is now displaying 25 unique pieces of textile art from Tunisia and Libya. They are long scarves to cover women's heads. They are called bachnouk, and together with their abstraction and multiple meanings, they also come with magic.
The weaver is sitting behind an upright loom. First, the warp was set up, as with every weaving. The weft was then added, and the motifs were realized in a technique that is known as supplementary weft. There is one chain and there are two wefts. The basic weft is wool. The supplementary weft is cotton. But we must imagine the wool was white and the cotton was white. And it's not the front side of the weaving that is directed towards the weaver, it's the back side. With all the chaos of the superfluous threads that are cut off. So the weaver did not see what she was creating. Even with the most complex motifs, she could not see. It's basically a mental knowledge and a bodily knowledge. And after completion of the piece, it was put in a vat of dye, of color, and the mordant was added to the color that made that the color only affected the wool and not the cotton. So only then the motifs appeared. And it's something also that is intimately linked to pregnancy. It was said that the crossing of the warp and the weft created what was called eruh, and that is soul. Concerning the colors, there are basically three: white, red, and black. Black implies everything that is dark. It may be dark brown, it may be dark blue, it may be violet, it may be black itself, that's all black. And it's a basic triad of life. It is felt. Remember, for instance, that alchemy, which came out of North Africa via Alexandria in Egypt, also operates with the basic triad white, red, and black. White is essentially the color of virginity or of young people, girls in general. That's also why there are almost no white bachnouks. It happened that a bachnouk was woven and worn by young unmarried girls, but then after marriage it was colored red and later on it could be colored black.
Some of the baknuk are also decorated with constellation of reddish rings at the very edges of the fabric.
Are made by a technique that is often called plangi. It's a tie-dye technique. Small strings are blocking off color on certain spots, and there, for instance, the blue color cannot enter the texture of the weaving and it remains red or sometimes white. And the multitude of those small dots or circles is felt as a sign of a desire of the multiplicity, the multitude, that what is not one. It always remembered me that book by Lucie Irigaray, Ce sexe qui n'en est pas un, this gender that is not one. You never find a tie-dye, one single tie-dye spot. They're always in company, so to say. On a literal level, it is said to refer to offspring, to many children, but that is not the only meaning.
Gender bias, lack of a codified language to describe and decode their complexity, are among the reasons why this textile art has been always discarded, always ignored.
The Bauhaus and Klee or Le Corbusier or the members of the Bauhaus, they knew about Moroccan carpet. They're only interested in the white carpets with simple, clear black motifs. It corresponds to their own desire to rule out everything what was supposed to be superfluous decoration. So they singled out every traditional art with a high degree of complexity. So these baknuks, these weavings, some of them are really free, asymmetrical, almost chaotical. Others display an extreme amount of microscopically developed motifs. And this was a world that was not appealing to the modern masters. Take the Bauhaus or similar. It was a complexity that they did not want to engage with. On a scholarly level, you were talking about the artists of the Bauhaus and related ones, but also on the level of scholarly disciplines, anthropology, art history, they still do not see. They just discard it as something irrelevant. And certainly there is a gender bias, as this weaving art is exclusively female, and what is at play is part of an experience of life, or that was proper to women, not to men. Maybe that played also a role, as male Western observers were unable to get a glimpse of what was behind. To modern standards, they were slaves, so confined to the house and the inner circle of the family and some friends in the village. There was an extreme complexity in the desire of expression. And that is something that is so striking nowadays. Everyone believes an artist must be free, must experience freedom in all her or his aspects of life. The women who created these weavings were not free at all. So they only had a kind of inner freedom expressed in their weavings. And I think that it would be very hard for many artists to achieve this sense of freedom in completely unfree conditions.
If you are interested to know more about these astonishing textiles, Paul van der Broek will be giving a lecture next October 14th, 2016 at 7 p.m. here at Villa Romana.